Hello, everybody.
Baby.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Love Hour podcast. I'm your host, Ms. Kev, on stage, and I'm joined by my husband and co-host,
The Kev on stage.
No mic today. We are social distancing because we have some stuff going on in the house today. So I am here, he is there, but we're still going to bring you the Love Hour. We have no guests. I'm actually going to take a break on guests for a little while simply because... Child, I'd be wanting to take a break. So that's what we're going to do. It'll be just Kevin
take
and I for a little while. I have an idea of the series that I want to do when we come back, but I just don't know when it'll be that I actually come back. It'll be a light series because I feel like all the singles that listen to The Love Hour have wanted me to do a single series. Man. And so that's what I think I want to do.
I would appreciate that.
A single series?
Great. You know, I'm talking about the lightness.
Oh, yeah.
Fertility might have been the hardest series for me. I was like, whew, this is tough. I know how important it is, and I know I get it, and I know why you did it, and I'm proud of you. I understand. But them days, I was like, this is V sad.
Yeah, what's this funny, the McIntyres, Shantaya and Michael McIntyre, we were supposed to talk about infertility with them because she actually had a secondary infertility and she ended up adopting. And then we ended up just like laughing and joking and just like having a good time that I didn't want to like, I don't know, ruin the vibe of what was going on. And so we just went with what was already established. I actually think it worked out really, really well.
The single crew has a emoji. It looks like the loading thing. Maybe it's like for their boo is loading.
Oh, I like it.
Like, are we buffering? But I think it might be partner loading.
Yeah, I love that actually. So I think that would be the series that I would do. I follow some phenomenal like single speakers, I guess. I don't exactly know what to call them, but or single influencers. I don't know what to call them. Anyways, I think they're phenomenal. I really think that they're quite good. So I've been following some of them for a while because this has been an idea that I've had. So I will, once I, you know, take a break and kind of regroup, I think that'll be something that we'll do in the future. But today, what we want to do is talk about building a brand, a legacy, an empire, and a family, which it may only be three when I do the title because I feel like that's quite long. What do you
brand, think? Legacy, empire, family?
Yeah.
Maybe just brand, legacy, empire. We don't need the family.
Hello? I think you do. I think that's part of the... I think it's part
you're
of
so
the mix.
Far in the screen. You're not filling the screen. My face is all big and closed.
Well, how do I do that?
Yeah, that's better. That's better.
I hate
it. Looks, we gotta be like this.
Oh.
You look like un bebé.
Is that better?
That's much better. Thank you. I also have a big face, so I tend to fill the screen.
I know. I'm like, I don't know. You want me to be like this?
No, I don't.
Weird. Okay, so the reason why I wanted to discuss this topic is because obviously, or not obviously, maybe you don't know, Kevin just started a podcast with Joey O, our youngest son. The first episode dropped and it was quite cute, actually. I thought it was really, really, really cute. But one of the things that Kevin was talking about is the idea that our kids are around a lot of entrepreneurs, like all of our friends are pretty much entrepreneurs, so it's all that they know. And so that's what they're naturally gravitating toward. And so I wanted to discuss what that, well, I guess starting off, what that means to build a brand and establishing this legacy that your kids are receiving as well. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So what are your thoughts? What do you have to say first?
Well, first, the fact that Joe asked me to do a podcast, and I knew he was serious because he asked me on multiple occasions.
Yeah.
And we were supposed to do it on Saturday. Then we had some stuff to do. We were supposed to do it on Sunday early. We had some stuff to do. Then we came back and took a nap. And as soon as I woke up, he was like, so are we shooting? And I was like, okay, so he's serious.
Yeah.
Joe, don't be playing around when he wants to do something. I wonder where he gets that from. When he wants to do something, he don't be playing around. So we shot it and I've watched it a million times. Mainly because I was so doggone impressed with how good he was at being, like, obviously I'm biased because I am his father and I brought him into this world,
First of all, you did not.
That's I was waiting for here. You.
The only person that has the scar that will not remove from her body is me. But continue.
I put the bun in the oven. You put it on bake.
I'm not going to go further with this analogy. So continue.
But anyway, be that as it may, I'm super biased, but I was watching and I was like, yo, this kid is really good. The most impressive thing he did is I set a timer on my laptop because I did a fake ad for him so that he can get used to doing ads, right? So I bought an ad for the comedy show for him. And I put my laptop behind the camera and I started a 10-minute timer because he said he wanted his podcast to be 20, 25 minutes. And I said, okay, if you're doing ads, it's going to come around the 10-minute mark.
Right.
So I put 10 minutes in and I didn't say anything. I told him when that gets to zero, you got to do an ad within 1 minute, you know. And I watched him and I was going to, you know, like nudge him or something like that. And he did his best version of transitioning into an ad smoothly. And I was so proud, Melissa.
Yeah,
I was
exploded.
I was like, this boy really, you know, the crazy thing is it doesn't click how much they see us do this.
Right.
And it never seems like they're paying attention. They're always on their phone or playing with their Switch, but he watches more than Isaiah does.
Yeah.
Now. He comes to the office more. He hangs out more.
I think they're both watching. I think they're watching with a different eye. So even thinking back to, you know, I give the example of, you know, you and I both started watching YouTube, so to speak, at the same time we were both at bowling. You were watching it from on stage or a creator perspective when you were watching, you know, Timothy De La Ghetto back then, because he was a big YouTuber, all those type of people, you're thinking, what am I learning from you so that I too can turn on the camera and do this? I was watching it, but I'm looking at it from a consumer's perspective. So even oftentimes when you're creating things, I'm often like, I feel like that's too long. It's never long enough for you because you're like, it's funny, keep it all there. As an audience, I'm like, I've tapped out of this, cut that. And I think that's the difference in the perspectives that even with them, Joey is, he watches YouTube all day long. Who knew that maybe he wants to be like a YouTuber, so to speak, or a front cameraman. Isaiah is looking at things like that CGI was off. Did you see this? What about this? Let me learn about the actors. Let me learn. He's looking at it. They're watching, but they're watching from a different perspective. So they're gleaning different information. Does that make sense?
That makes perfect sense. And that's actually really good insight from our kids. I didn't even think about that. Isaiah watches movie reviews of movies he hasn't seen and sees like, and he'll watch like a video of like how to develop great characters or whatever, stuff like that. And Joe watches creators and he watches like the people who do Let's Plays and who he likes, right? That's why he can joke around about doing smash that like button. Like the fact that he knows that that's a tactic.
It's the joke, right?
It's the joke. So when I'm watching him, I'm like, he's captivating. Mm-hmm. He held the conversation. I actually saw him do jokes the way I do jokes.
Absolutely. Even when he was like, talking about his mannerisms, and it's funny to watch him and also see yourself. So
somebody had a funny comment about that. They said it's like, he's like part Melissa, part Kev, kind of like they had if they had a kid or something.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's funny because even in Washington, and I think we'll move off Joe and kind of go back to the bigger conversation.
Oh, stay on him.
Yeah, stay on topic. That's Joe is me in that regard. But
he was not going for it.
No, and I'm the same way. Like, we're over here. I wanted us to be here. Let's pull it back in. Okay. I have an agenda. Let's get through it.
He was like, all right, you're going off.
Yeah.
Puffy. Back on topic. The topic is women's shoes. That's what we're talking about.
Right. But one of the things that I noticed he kept doing, and I was like, okay, so that's absolutely something that I do, is he says ain't. But in normal conversation, I don't really say ain't. But when I'm trying to be animated or funny or prove a point, so he kept saying like, I ain't going outside.
Yeah.
That's my inflection. That's my tone. That's
voice. This triangle is your face. I actually never, thank you, Josh. God bless you. I actually...
No, they didn't have Kramer, I'm sorry.
Okay, that's fine. I never saw him look so much like you than on that episode, especially when he was mocking you.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, oh my God, you are your mother's child. And the last thing I want to say, when he did the pants thing, you ain't going nowhere. Yeah. Where you finna go? Nowhere. I don't have no pants on. If I didn't show you this, I was like, oh my gosh, that is my whole comedic
Absolutely.
Ability. That is my whole comedic style, that whole thing. But then he'll be very subdued and be like you. So he's like a dry version of me that can do what I do, but is not like me all the time.
Right. And I think that, again, goes back to this idea of like the legacy that you're leaving your children. I looked this up. Hold on. Let me find my definition. I found an actual definition for legacy. And it is a gift of property, especially personal property, as money by will or bequest. But one of the things who am I? Who are me? However, I'm about to say what I'm about to say. To add to that, I think sometimes legacy is also those characteristics and traits and personality things that you pass down to your kids that they recognize as a skill. So it's one thing to just come from a funny family. It's another thing to learn how to monetize that funny. I feel like that too is legacy.
100%.
Even Joe's idea, we went to the dentist yesterday, and as we're walking out of the car, he says to me, keep that in the house. What did he say?
Everything is house.
Everything is house. That's what he said. Everything is house. And I was like, I don't know what you're saying. He's like, Mommy, we can do a shirt. We need things that say, or mother, we need things that say everything is house. And I was like, Joe, I don't understand what you're saying to me. Like, I don't get it. He's like, Mom, in the podcast, we were talking about like house shoes and this and that and that third. And I was like, okay. He was like, we should put that on a shirt. I said, well, you should text daddy. Even his mind thinking about, okay, I have this podcast and, you know, now I need to figure out how to, you know, have merch and I need to.
Hold.
So I even think that is, you know, part of entrepreneurship. And then again, just to kind of transfer it over to like the brand perspective, is that we don't know what we're doing. Our parents weren't entrepreneurs. I mean, I guess your mom dabbled in entrepreneurship, but.
No, she did it. Like she didn't. Oh, you mean like full time?
Right.
And yeah. I mean, she always had a hustle point.
Right. And she always, your dad always worked. So it was kind of like, you know, and she managed to like, she worked at the church and she dabbled in it. You know what I mean? But I think to really kind of create a business, an empire, which is another one of the words I wanted to use for the title of this, is that we're building an empire. And part of that is establishing the legacy that you leave for your children. So how do you, go ahead.
No, I was just, you're going to ask a question. I'm just so excited.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to say that Joe has pretty adamantly said he doesn't want to go to college. Oh, right. Yeah. And we have been like, you know, college is just the next thing. Isaiah is like, I want to go not only to college, I want to go to film school.
Right.
That is what I want to do. I want to go to film school because I want to direct movies. Joe is like, I don't want to go to one more second of school than I absolutely have to. And he said he wanted to be a stand-up comedian. He wanted to be a podcaster. So for me, it was like, I feel the most proud because what we can offer our kids is something our parents can offer. And this is not to shade them. Like they took us out of what our situation would have been and allowed us to be this. Like they did their part and we're doing our part. But we can give our children the resources to pursue their dreams, right? They can say, Joe can say, I want to do a podcast and we can shoot it. Like in this room right here, we can build that into a studio. We can like shoot it for real. You know what I'm saying? Like, and then we can monetize it. Like, I don't want to monetize it right now because I want him to like do it without any pressure. And I'll be the one to buy his first ad. But it's like, by the time this kid graduates high school, he can be a pro. Like the same way we talked about this before, Joe's really good at soccer, but I used to want him to go to the Premier League.
Yeah.
And then I realized like those kids have been pros since they're like 8, 9, 10, right, 11, right, like been in academy and stuff. A tennis pro can go pro at like 11, 12, boxers at like 15, 16. If he's getting paid for even the dynamic ads, if Audio Boom just puts dynamic ads on the podcast, no red ads, he's technically a professional.
Sure.
Or he's getting paid, right?
Right, right, right.
And his 10,000 hours is going to come so much earlier. We're not even counting the years of Awesomeness TV. Mm-hmm. That's just, and the other thing I'm glad is I did not push him to do this. He came back and was like, this is what I want to do. I want to be like you. And he always paid a little bit more, a little bit more attention, like you said, to the performance aspect of stuff. And Isaiah always paid more attention. Now that I'm thinking about on set, Isaiah watched the director,
right,
when we were on the Major Deal set. Josiah watched the actors.
Right.
Isaiah wants to stand behind the camera. He's like, why did you shoot that? What's the lens?
Right. And
Joe's like, why are you doing this again if they, right, did it? You know what I'm saying? Right. So my goal is one day for Isaiah to direct a movie that Joe stars in. That would be like, and also it's my last thing I want to say, and I want to continue to let you do your thing. It is so rewarding for your kids to be interested in what you do on, right, their own accord. Like if they wanted to be a mathematician or mechanic, it wouldn't really matter to me. Once they both didn't want to play basketball, I was like, okay, so parenthood isn't about forcing them to do what you like. It's about letting them find their own thing. So I didn't really care if they wanted to do what I did, but I ain't gonna lie and say I'm not super ecstatic that he asked me to do a podcast and was like, okay, now my next topic, I want to talk about why are there so many colors? I just thought it was such a, like, such a funny thing to talk about, you know, like, why are there so many covers? Let's talk about color. So anyway, I love it so much. I'm sorry, Liz, and I'm sorry, Angel,
okay,
and I'm sorry, dear Kev. It is my favorite podcast, and we've only done one episode.
I think that's okay. You're obviously a part of it, but I think, you know, to be super proud of what your son is doing, I think that's okay. The other thing I was going to say is that one of the questions that I realize now and as an adult that I hate, and I've started to rephrase the way that I even ask the boys, is what do you want to be when you grow up?
Mm-hmm.
What I realize is that part of knowing what you want to do is being exposed to many of things, what you might, yeah, want to do, what you know you don't want to do. Like, be that exposure to everything is what kind of narrows in what you're actually interested in. And when you're 5, 6, 7 years old, you simply don't have that exposure. So even a kid saying, I want to be a doctor, they don't even know enough to decide that's what they want to do. So part of, I feel like our job as parents is actually not pigeonholing them into one specific thing, but allowing them the opportunity to be exposed to many things. So try doing podcasts, try doing acting, also try soccer, also try math, also try science, try engineering, try architecture, like try all of these things, and you can find out, I absolutely hate this, and beyond that, this specifically is what I don't like. So then when another job comes up, you know, it's not just I don't like, you know, the medical field, I specifically don't like this aspect of it. So any job that is centered around this specific aspect, I know right away that's not a match for me. And what we don't often do is have that exposure. Even as adults, I feel like as adults, it's oftentimes where we're like, I don't know what I want to do. I don't know what I like. And it's because we're afraid to try new things. But part of recognizing what you want to do is the freedom to be exposed to many different things, trying a gazillion different things and being comfortable saying that ain't it and not being looked at as a failure.
So good. Everything you said is so good. Two things I want to say on that. Remember when Joe, like, we would travel a lot trying to expose them, like you're talking about, just to the world in general, just so they see that the world is big.
Right.
And also made me really happy when Joe said, Japan is one of the best moments of my life, and then realized that flying first class is, like, I don't even should complain. I know. But remember when he was like, we noticed he's kind of really good at taking pictures? Like, man, you actually, like, have a good eye. We have Josh who can be like, this is what I do. Here's what I use. You know what I mean? If he wants to go down that path. But right now he's just like, and I notice he only likes taking pictures when he sees beautiful scenery.
Right.
It's not people. He's like, oh, this looks cool. Like that sushi restaurant we went to. And when we travel the world, he's like, oh man. And he has all the pictures from everywhere we've went saved in his phone. And then I think about Mel, how Mel knew at like, when I met Mel, she was 12 years old. She was in the AV club and she was like, I want to be like Oprah. I want to work in TV and film when I grow up. Right. She's 12. That girl is a full Netflix executive. So she knew what she wanted to do, but it took having access to that at school, having parents who could pay for her to go to college, and get, and then even the money for internships at the radio station, I can't remember the name of it, and the TV stuff that she did, and then eventually getting into Cartoon Network, and then knowing, like, she's amazing because she basically knew what she wanted to do for a long time and then like went down that path for it. And I think just like having kids that can do that. And even it even spreads out to all of our, like our nieces and nephews. Julian is like, he sells resale shoes. And I bought some shoes from him. Like if you are a business runner, as a hustler, as a kid, I'm all in. I remember when I've talked about this before. I had that candy shop at kids when I was a kid, and I had the lawn mowing thing, and I marketed my own lawn care company, and I see that in my kids that I got from my mom, and I see that in my kids, and I see it in my nieces and nephews, and Jay kids are like, I want to do what Uncle Kevin does. He do whatever he want to do. He runs his own businesses and stuff, and I'm just glad that they can be exposed to that. Because you were talking about doctor and lawyer. You know why that, I think that comes from like, when you're a kid and you watch those shows, it's like, what do you want to be? This is a doctor. This is a lawyer. You know what I mean? Like, this is an engineer. Bob the Builder works construction. That's all you kind of hear about when you're watching stuff like that. You don't hear like, I want to own a podcast. I want to be a podcaster. Right. That's not even a thing that's available to you.
Right. And I think part of it is because as adults, we're not exposed to that. The only thing I knew was teacher, lawyer, doctor. You don't even recognize that there's so many, even as an example, and this not just to focus on like the entrepreneurial aspect, but I worked in the aerospace industry and I was a procurement agent. I didn't even know that was a job. I didn't know that that was a thing. I did not know that that was even a possibility. And so part of it is that our minds haven't been exposed to all of the different opportunities and jobs that there are available for us. I worked in contracts and in procurement, but either way, contracts, I didn't even know that was a, you know what I mean, a job that we could do. And so I think that our job in creating, again, the idea of this legacy for our children, whether you're an entrepreneur or not, is figuring out, helping your kids figure out what they are actually good at and being able to capitalize on that in more ways than just doctor, lawyer, teacher. Like there are so many other job opportunities out there that we just don't know about.
Yeah, absolutely.
The other thing I was going to say is one thing that is, you know, kind of difficult, I would say, in trying to do all of these things. I mean, we very heavily just talked about being the parent aspect of building, you know what I mean? Building this legacy in regards to what it means to be a parent. And one of the best ways that you can build your legacy is by popping a blue chew. I mean, what better way than to establish your legacy and your, what is it called when you're talking about your child?
Your what? Your seed?
Yeah, maybe your seed. I kept thinking of next of kin, but maybe your seed is get a start on all of it and pop a blue chew. You guys know
create that your legacy starts with a hard penis.
Yes, it does. And so we want to tell you about Blue Chew. You guys already know about Blue Chew. They are friends of the podcast, and there is no better time than quarantine than popping a Blue Chew and getting it on and popping and establishing your legacy. Are you done?
Yes.
If this is your first time hearing about Blue Chew, listen, they are the first chewable tablet. They have an FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra.
Lineage.
and see Alice. They will help you establish your legacy. I'm being funny, but they're made in the USA, which is a really big deal right now. I feel like a lot of people are concerned about where things are made. So this is made in the USA. And best of all, you do not have to leave your house because we're concerned about going out with our mask and picking up things. They will deliver things straight to your door in discreet packaging, so you don't have to worry about your neighbors or your existing legacies being all up in your business, because they will deliver it to your house in discreet packaging. All you're gonna do is go to bluechew.com to get your first shipment for free. Use promo code LOVE. All you're gonna do is
love.
Pay $5 for shipping. That's blue, like the color, B-L-U-E, chew.com, promo code LOVE. Try it for love. Free. And as always, Blue Chew, thank you for always being a down and dirty podcast supporter.
Sponsor the podcast and sponsor my penis.
And sponsoring the legacies of 2020. I also want to tell you about BetterHelp. I have been on BetterHelp. I actually just went back on their app this weekend and am still looking for a therapist. But I'm gonna tell you, one of the best things about this is that you can take your time finding your perfect match. I don't know if this is what you're supposed to do, but this is what I always do. I go in there, you fill out, these are the criteria that I want. They give you a host of potential therapists. You can sign up for one session. You see if you're vibing or not. And then you have, you decide if you want to continue to see them or not. It's been going really, really well for me. I think during this time, we're all at a point where we need someone to talk to, or we're probably experiencing some sort of trauma right now with the way 2020 is working. I think we're all just
easily.
Huh?
I said easily. It's some mental trauma.
Yeah, I think we're all just really stressed and just have a lot. I know I personally have a lot going on, which is why I'm like, I need to find this perfect match. You can start communicating within 48 hours. You literally can decide if you want a male or a female, if you want them to be Christian or not, if you want them to be a person of color or not. Like, these are all the things that matter. You want someone that looks like you, maybe understands your culture, and you can absolutely kind of detail these things through the BetterHelp app.
Listen, therapy has been the single best thing to come out of quarantine for me. And a lot of times, you know, I have my weekly scheduled therapist, but what BetterHelp offers me is a little bit more time to have somebody when I need them. My wife is the reason that I started therapy, and she actually probably is the most, the main beneficiary of it. And I want you to have that, whether you're single, married, whatever, targeting your issues and helping to point out your problematic areas is super important. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's professional counseling done securely online. There's a broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available in many areas. This service is available for clients worldwide. You don't have to be subject to just the people around you. You might live in Macomb, Mississippi, and they might not have the best therapist in Macomb. No disrespect to Macomb. It's just a small town. Your therapist might live in Kansas City or New York or Waco, Texas. And with BetterHelp, you can get them right in your face. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy. I also like this. I'd be doing therapy in my car, in my garage, in my Maserati that I have to turn in on Friday. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches so they can make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. Visit their website and read their testimonials that are posted daily.
Visit BetterHelp.com/lovehour. That's BetterHelp, that's H-E-L-P, and join the over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. That's because we need help. Special offer for Love Hour listeners, get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/lovehour. Highly
Love Hour.
And that you guys do this. Highly recommend that you guys do this. Okay, so one of the things that I wanted to talk about as well in this building an empire, legacy, a family, a brand, is the balancing act of it all. So one of the things that you and I were just having this conversation that I struggle with quite a bit is that when I have to choose between brand building, business, or being a mom or a wife, I always choose mom or wife. So I'll get up and make breakfast. I'll go to the grocery store and cook dinner. I'll clean up. I'll throw a load of clothes in the laundry. Like, I will do those tasks, so to speak, instead of building the Miss Kev on Stage brand. Recently, I've started to take that a little bit more seriously, but meaning the Miss Kev on Stage brand. But even still, I struggle with that. So how do you find, do you feel like you're, you know, balance in quotations, because we understand that balance isn't a thing, but do you find yourself in a struggle with that?
My struggle
is on stage interview, isn't it?
No, it feels like a conversation.
Okay.
Don't restart my computer. I've been pushing this restart for so long. I just got a notification that said, we're turning your computer off in 58 seconds. Like, don't do that. I'm going to keep on pushing this thing. This is probably like the second year I've been doing this. But anyway, my thing is the other way around.
Okay.
My natural inclination is to do the work stuff, and it always comes first. There's a part of the big leap, and I see some people saying it's a hard audio listen, so read the book. I always read books, not because of audio book. If I don't read a book, my mind just wanders. When I listen, I can't focus. So
are you talking about the big leap? I missed if you actually said that.
Yeah, I'm talking about the big leap.
Yeah, that's actually going to be my book for next month in the book club.
Okay. There's a specific part of the book where the author talks about what you just said, and he said a lot of women feel that I am not doing my womanly, wifely, motherly duties because of this creative passion. And sometimes that's the way we raise, sometimes that's society, and sometimes it's a coping mechanism to like say, hey, it's okay that I don't do this because I've got to take care of this, that, and that, right? It's a fair thing because you want to be a good mom. And also, like, your mom, and I can attest to this, because I used to go to your house for this reason, your mom cooked hot breakfast every day.
She did.
Every day. And she worked. So like she wasn't staying home. Like every day I went to, I've told this story before, but I don't care. It's funny every time. I went to your house for like 2 weeks and I just started going over there to eat breakfast because I was like, bro, she be making French toast sticks, like grits, like always something. It wasn't always like she's slaving, but she would have Costco, but it was always hot and ready.
Yeah.
And I told my mom, hey, you know, Melissa mom cooks hot breakfast every day. Do you think you could do that? My mom was like, sure, yes. You know what? I'm glad you asked. The next morning, she had a bowl of Fruit Loops on the table. No spoon, no milk, just one bowl of Fruit Loops. And I was like, you could have just said no. If you didn't really want to do it, like you if tried. Your heart wasn't, just say no. Like everybody's not like that. So I think that's something that was modeled for you. And maybe you associate being a good mother with cooking and cleaning and doing motherly things. That wasn't model for me. My mom didn't care. She didn't cook. She made sure food was available. And I always saw, actually, this is actually becoming clear to me now. Uh-huh. I always saw her working on her business. Mm. When I would come in from playing, she'd be at the laptop or the, you know, we ain't had no laptop. She'd be at the desktop designing flyers, printing out flyers, asking what I thought. Kev, do you think a travel business will work? You want to tell your, you know what I'm saying? Like, I always saw her doing that. So what was model for me is, if you're hungry, go eat. I got to do this. I got to have a meeting. I got to set something up. So to me, a mother was a hustler. So I'm like, I'm being like, and I saw her writing books and doing poetry and teaching, you know what I'm saying? Like teaching classes in church. So I kind of gravitated towards that. So I think that you almost for you, it'd be like a rewiring of what a good mom is.
Right.
Because you always feel a way about Postmates and like eating out too much. And I think that is a fair part of that. Like, I don't discount that because I know your heart is you'd want your kids to have healthy food and Postmates and all that type of stuff. I'm more like, all right, in order for us to do this business, maybe we need to get a chef. Not because we're rich, but because in order to do what we need to do and also have healthy food, I'd rather hire a chef or do meal prep or do whatever, you know what I'm saying? Like a housekeeper. It's not because I want to flex. It's because cleaning the house takes 3 hours on Saturday. If I shoot a brand deal video, I can make 15 times that amount in the same amount of time. So if it's $100 for someone else to clean the house and I can make potentially $15,000 in that same amount of time, I'll give you $100 so that I can make $15,000.
Right.
And I don't feel no way about that, but you might feel a way. But also my house when I grew up was kind of messy. Not well, your house was pristine. My house was
my mom used to literally bleach the trash can on the outside of the house. Like, I have thought about doing this. The dumpster that's on the outside of the house, I'm like, oh, it stinks. It smells like trash. It's a dumpster. It should smell like trash. But there's a difference between like, oh, it's a dumpster trash and like, oh, this smells like trash. And so I feel like I should like go out there and like bleach it and pine saw it and like clean it out, because those are the things my mom would do. But you bring up a really interesting point that we kind of, and one of the points that I wanted to talk about is one of the things I said recently is broke is around the corner.
Yes. So
part of the reason that I have such a hard time or outsourcing or hiring help is because I always feel like broke is around the corner, and you can't build a brand, you can't build an empire, you can't build a business trying to do everything yourself. And our build do everything ourselves is different. Yours is very much your control freak and that's what you want to do. Mine is, but if I outsource it, I have to pay you. What if tomorrow I don't have the money and I gave it to you today, then I'm stuck tomorrow. So let me hold on to everything because I don't know what the future holds. And you can't eat. Neither one of these is sustainable. Neither one of our models is sustainable.
No, it's the kite and the string now need to work together.
It's the kite and the string that now, I got it.
Yeah, I need to work together. Huh?
Keep going, I like it.
So we were shooting this weekend and I was driving the Maserati and we pulled up to a shoot with a friend of ours and her manager. I pulled up with the Maserati. He got the Rolls Royce Bentley coupe, okay? Pitch black windows, and he's not renting it. He has it for real.
Right.
I felt away. I almost backed out the Maserati and parked it down the block. Not because it wasn't a pristine car. It was, it ain't no Rolls.
Right.
But also, He had the roles for real.
Right.
One thing he said Saturday that I'd never thought about. He said, nobody becomes a millionaire by saving. They become a millionaire by investing.
Okay.
There are some things that we're working on that we are, you know, we've been talking about in, you know, blah, blah, that require a super investment, right? Okay. And even I'm like, whew. And because they wanted their money up front. And I'm like, what if it doesn't have to work? The money is gone now. I cannot return it up to me void. And I think about the Bible, like when they got that person got the talents, you can't bury them. And in order to make a million, you might have to lose 10,000, right? Yeah. Whatever, like there's some risk associated with that. And for me, I always think about me lying on my deathbed. It's not as morbid as this, but this is what I think about. I want to lie on my deathbed and go peacefully knowing, boy, I gave it everything. Right. I mean, I royally missed sometimes. Remember that thing we did? That sucked, actually. Remember that house we got to live in for a while? It was dope. We only got to live there for a minute, but boy, remember when we was on the golf course? Like, remember when we came to get this house, you were like, Kev, I don't know. I was like, listen, whether we stay here for a month or a year, we will be able to say, we used to live on the golf course, boy. Now we're in this cardboard box. But once upon a time, you know, we lived. And with my family, and that's why I'm always like, let's travel. Let's go to Amsterdam. Let's go to Japan. Like, let's do all the things, because didn't think about quarantine. We for sure can't do that stuff now.
Right.
But it's so that when I die, I can die knowing I freaking gave it everything. And I didn't. I will mentally deteriorate if on my deathbed I'm like, what if I just would have just gave it everything? What would have happened? And that's kind of what I want my kids to see. Like, bro, go for it. You might fail. That is a real possibility. It is a real thing.
No, and I
but think you might not fail.
Right. And I think what's so funny is I feel like I have the fear on both ends. So sometimes I have to psych myself up to just be like, okay, do it right now. If you don't do it right now, you're gonna change your mind tomorrow. So do it right now. Because if I literally don't do it in the moment that I'm feeling the conviction and the passion, once it passes, there's no guarantee it'll ever come back, because I have the fear and it exists on both ends. So while your fear may be, you know, I did it all, win or lose, I know that I have exhausted all possibilities in this lifetime. Yeah. I have this really weird, God, I don't want to not do everything you have for me to do. And dang, I also freaks me out to be what I absolutely could be, because I feel like there's so much exposure and vulnerability, and you become like this target for people to like throw darts at you, and it freaks me out. And so, you know, balancing fair, though, those two things, huh?
I said, that's fair. Like, you're not, your fears aren't boogeyman in the closet. Your fears are things that have legit happened. Like, when you get big, you do become a target. That's not an irrational fear.
Right.
We've seen that happen. We've seen people be like, this is not what I want. This is not what I like. Like, you know, that's not an irrational fear. I just want to say that, like, you're not tripping. You, those are legit fears for a reason. However, I don't think you should be crippled by those fears.
Right. And that's the, I feel like the, sorry, I looked at the lights and now I'm like seeing stars. I feel like the, you know, the phase of life, and part of the reason, even when I'm thinking about the book club and we're doing the big leap, literally next month, I feel like the whole theme is going to be the big leap, because I feel like I finally got to a point of frustration with myself of wanting and wishing, but never actually doing. Of hoping and visualizing, but never actually doing. So I feel like, okay, Melissa, you can hope, wish, want, you could see, visualize, daydream, do all of these things, but until you actually do, it's just a dream. It's just midnight prayers. It's really nothing else. And so, but I had to get over, again, going back to that original thought, is I had to get over broke is around the corner. Because there are things, and there's a level of excellence, I'll use, that I want to put out, and that's not something I can do on my own. One of the things I had to realize is that if this is what you want, and you recognize it's something you can't produce on your own, that means you have to hire help. If you have to hire help, that means it's going to cost you some dollars. You either have to be okay with receiving an invoice and hitting pay, or shut up about it. And so I had to like have that real.
Did that happen in your mind? Were you telling yourself?
Yes. I have to have these conversations with myself like this in order for me to move, in order for me to do. And so, you know, again, this is kind of a lot when it comes to building the brand and the legacy, but you know, I you know, hired these photographers, whatever. And it was so easy. This is how it works when you're like scared and you really don't want to do it. So I was like, I want to hire Black women. Like, that's the thing. If Black women don't support Black women, then who's going to support us? You need to hire Black women. So I'm searching high and low, looking for a Black photographer, Black women photographers. It took me a good day and a half to find some. And in the very beginning, it's very easy to just be like, well, I mean, I guess this is a sign.
You don't need to sign when you don't want to do it.
Listen, let me just give up. And I still have to like talk myself over that hump in order to continue to do. Otherwise, it would be 3 weeks later where I am today, still talking about what I want to do is, and that's it. That's as far as the conversation goes.
Mm-hmm. I listen, it's so funny because I see it in you. But it is so, me and your sister, Mel, are more alike, and you and Greg are more alike in this way.
Oh.
You know, Mel is like, let's go travel, let's spend this money, I don't wanna live here. And I'm like, let's do it. But it's also how you're wired and how I'm wired, and why we gotta, you know, why we work better together, because I can see like, you know, especially in this season of our life, you being who you are has saved us a lot of times.
Yeah.
And maybe me being who I am has inspired you sometimes.
No, absolutely. Even when you think about the kite and the string, that analogy that I really love. Thank you, Reggie Lee, for giving that to us. But one of the things that Shantaya said is that I would be a kite and drift away. And one of the things I think is really an analogy that I see, or visual, I think is a better word, that I see, is the kite without the string. Not, you go high, but you also can fly too close to the sun. And that's dangerous. The yeah. opposite, though, is true to the, with the string. The string needs the kite to be lifted up. Without yeah. it, you fall to the ground and you go nowhere. Yes. And I feel like that's exactly the risk of a kite without a string and a string without the kite. It's twofold. You both have value and serve a purpose in this relationship. And you have to be careful not to despise the kite for taking you out of your comfort zone to the point where maybe you feel like it's all a failure, and not despise the string where you feel like we're not going fast enough, we're not doing everything that I want to see, because they're also keeping you from flying too close to the sun and crashing and burning, basically.
100%.
Okay, I think that those are really valuable lessons for, you know, anybody that's in this kind of kite and string dynamic. And I think it's something that over time you learn to appreciate. I think otherwise yeah. you can become resentful of your kite, or become resentful right. of your string, because you don't understand the value that they add. And these are things, like I said, that you learn over time. One thing that you don't have to press pause on and wait to learn is going on Skillshare, picking any number of things that they have available for you to learn. They have inspiring classes for creative and curious people, and not just creative and curious people. They also have what I have coined the learned creative, or the person that is
learned creative,
or the person that is very much like me, where you feel like you need to ground your creativity in something like 9 to 5-ish, so to speak. So I'm like right. a spreadsheet person or whatever. This, the classes that they offer you will inspire you, but also they help you, again, just kind of give you practical steps to ground that creativity in something that's actionable. So I've taken tons of their classes. I've taken a graphic design class. We've taken photography classes. I've taken branding classes. I've taken time management classes. Like, literally there's some of everything for everyone on this platform. Skillshare offers membership with meaning. With so much to explore, real projects to create, and the support of fellow creative, Skillshare empowers you to accomplish real growth. Skillshare has classes to fit your schedule and skill level. Skillshare is also incredibly affordable, especially when compared to pricey in-person classes and workshops. An annual subscription is less than $10 a month, which is phenomenal. Ah. Because it's basically a bunch of master classes all in one place. And that's, you know, yes. that's what you need. Explore your creativity and get two free months of premium membership.
Two free months, Lisa?
Skillshare.com/lovehour. You're going to get
love two hour.
Whole months of unlimited access to thousands of classes for free. Get started today. Head over to Skillshare.com/lovehour. And when you
love sign hour.
Up, make sure to tag us in the class that you're taking and tell us what you're learning. Again, Skillshare.com/lovehour.
Love hour.
Okay, first of all, I was totally like Black Girl Magic and you were in church, so our vibes did not match.
That's because I'm saved all the time.
Hello, judgment.
And also, I'm glad we talked about this today, because I was like, man, I need to talk about JoJo, and I was going to have to do it on Here's the Thing, because I was like, I got to get this out. I'm so doggone proud of this boy, and I'm just so happy. So I'm glad we actually talked about it on this.
Oh, good. The last, I guess, little bit we can talk about that I have in my notes is the idea. Did we cover all of that? Did you feel like we put a button on that topic? What?
Yes. I just got a notification from the auto body thing that my vehicle's on track to be finished on Friday. And I'll keep it for a little while.
Maserati Kev is not a real thing.
It is. I was hoping they were like, oh, the parts weren't in. We need another front.
We need the moment that it was.
No. You know what, though? I ain't going to hold you. I'm getting the AC fixed before I turn that car back in.
Oh, that's fine. I think you should get the AC
because fixed. I, Yeah, and that's not me just trying to extend it, but it is me just trying to extend it.
I know.
But it has been unnaturally hot here the last like month or so. It's been like over 100 degrees, and that AC on that Toyota be like, I am for like 70 degrees.
Well, and that car is old, Kev.
That car is old. I'm going to tell you right now, Melissa Fredericks.
But let me be right clear. I'm not saying by
No. Let me be clear.
My money story is telling me that the answer is no.
My God said yes. When Jesus says yes, your Melissa can't say no.
I said Melissa can't say no.
That would have fit too. Actually should have said that. I hope that Toyota's like, it's gonna be $8,000 to fix this. And I'd be like, what? This is total. When I got the estimate from the body shop, I was like, because that bumper was falling off. They were like $800. I was like, that's a regular price. I need something to make me feel like this is not worth it. And I want them to be like, Kevin, ain't worth it. When I turn that Maserati on, that thing go vroom.
I know, and it's fast, and it's a lot. Well,
I am going to try, Melissa, when I have to give that car back.
Settle on this here moment for real. One of the things that I find to be actually really super inspiring from you, and I think maybe it's something that people that are listening and in this like building empire brand legacy type of mindset, is that you are very easily inspired by things to drive you to do more. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely.
So even with this Maserati situation, it's more than just like, you know, you're kind of playing, but also in the back of your mind, you're like, no, but this is going to be my reality soon enough. How do you, it's like when, if the listeners watch, what was the Michael Jordan doc?
The Last Dance,
and he would literally make up these stories about his opponents, talking bad about him, you know, talking crap about his family, whatever. He would make up these scenarios to get himself to a point where he could meet and perform at an excellent level. I feel like you don't do that, but I definitely feel like you're very easily inspired by these
situations. Like, I am so inspired.
How do you stay motivated to do that and not feel like it's a far-fetched dream that's silly?
I think that's a great question.
Thank you.
Part of it is my competitive nature.
Okay.
Part of it is this doggone book, because as much as I'm confident and ridiculous,
I'm gonna have you come on the big leap and like do a thing for the girls, for the booze.
Me?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I was about to say we should get that guy. Might get him, Gay Hendrix. I can go from 0 to 60 in no time flat, just like the Maserati. It's the same reason I'm a advertiser's wet dream. You can sell me on a story quickly and I can buy into it. Like, although I was playing with that Maserati message I had when I got it, I also was like, low key, this also could be God being like, bro, you can get this. Oh, I know what I was going to say. So the big leap was talking about like, not being afraid to live in your life, like getting the, yeah, like I'm paraphrasing because I don't remember exactly how they phrased it, but like maybe you can afford the car and you really can. And your reasoning for like the Toyota's like, I don't want, you know, like to be honest, my thing is like, if I had bought that Maserati for real, I probably would have never made that video because I don't want to ever come across as braggy. I would have just been driving it. But I'm like, let me just, like, I have my parts of you too, where I'm like, the Corolla is safer, it's paid off, blah, blah, blah. In case, you know, whatever goes wrong, I always got a paid off car. But then I can also say Isaiah's 14, he'll be 16 soon. I can start teaching, well, you can start teaching him how to drive in that car and I can give it to him and I can get a Maserati. I'm going to tell you right now, though, without a shadow of a doubt, there's no way I'm turning. When your lease is up for that Honda, there's no way I'm getting a Honda or anything like that. I'm gonna give you some time now to prepare your mind. That's the last time I get a car like that. So just know, Maserati Kev might be a year or two. By the time that lease is over, we might have dueling Maseratis. You might have the coupe, I might have the truck. I'm not living my life in fear no more. I'm not hiding my shine. I'm not gonna be humble because you're insecure. If my bank account says I can have a Maserati and everything else be good, then I'm going to drive it. And I'm not gonna brag, and I'm not gonna do anything like that, but I'm also not gonna be like, I'm not gonna have this because what will people think? People gonna think something about me no matter what, so at least you're gonna have to think about me and watch the Maserati, cause that thing got some jump in it. You feel me? And also, I got a Maserati message that the Lord gave to me today for the comedy show tomorrow. So tune in there. God already gave it to me. Okay. But yeah, I'm not going to brag anymore. I'm not going to brag, but I'm also not going to dim. Because really, I could be talking about what, yeah, because really it's what God has given me. So who am I to say, let me not talk about what God has done for me because of what people might say. Like, y'all gonna say what y'all want, but that Maserati gonna be in the garage. You feel me?
What is so interesting is the finding the balance and the difference between purposely and intentionally not dimming your shine, your light, and feeling braggadocious. Like, trying to find that balance. If we're being completely honest, I very much struggle with this, even to the point where, I don't know if Chloe is in the chat, but she was sent me a gift. Actually, it's a jewelry container, because I showed the Boo Hive where I keep my jewelry in that plastic bag. So she was nice enough to send it to me. So when she was asking me for my address, she was like, I think I had misspelled the city. And I went immediately into, like, no, it's not that, it's this, that, and that. She was like, first of all, girl, I wouldn't even ask you all that. Like, I was literally just asking because it came up this way, and you gave it to me this way, I just needed you to confirm. And I was telling her that I immediately feel the need to downplay. And that's not, listen, let me all be clear. Like, that's not to say we out here living, you know, large. That's not at all. But I just feel like, you know, I think finding that balance, I'm just saying, is difficult. And even I remember, okay, we're going to get off this because this can go really kind of first world problems-ish, and that's not what I want the conversation to be. But the point is, I think that you can become really inspired. And I think that's the mark, that type of like motivation and inspiration from other people that's not looked at as jealousy, and it's not a negative or a bad thing, but it's something that you use as driving fuel to accomplish what you want to do. I think that's something that's like, there's something to be said about that, especially when I think about Michael Jordan and you see him with this exact same trait.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I think I 100% agree with you. And here's the thing, man. We have worked hard. We have, you know, or are constantly perfecting our craft. Mm-hmm. We've made great decisions. Like, we're not stealing. We're not cheating people to this. Right. We're not scamming people. You know, I've had like TV commercials. Like, what's the point of doing all this work and all this if you can't enjoy the fruits of your labor? And right. Honestly, I the other thing that I thought about too, I was talking about how a couple weeks ago, how I have a hard time promoting because I don't want people to think this and that, but I have no problem promoting my friends, and I have no problem being happy for my friends when they achieve their success. So why not promote myself and be happy for myself? Like, why is it so much easier to say, man, congratulations, you deserve that role or that car or that house, but when I deserve it or we deserve it, why can't I be happy for myself and feel like I've got to be like, oh, we're going to just eat this bread and die. I don't want to do too much. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know why I feel like I need to dim what I do,
right?
But I never dim what my friends do or other people. I'm easily happy for them. So I'm trying to like break that mind state of myself where I can promote you. I can promote Toby and Tony's merch much more easily than I can promote my stuff. I feel no way about promoting my friends.
Right.
I feel like, well, if I promote my stuff, people are gonna get tired of seeing it or be like, enough already. No more. No more. I'm gonna promote like myself as much as,
No, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I think you're going to say something that I want to keep going.
Oh, I was just gonna say, I feel like the Big Leap has definitely kind of changed. I'm looking forward to reading it for this very reason. I think the problem for me is the sustainment of it. I really feel like that's why I have to do things in the moment. That's why I'm gonna, like, I'm thinking of activities for, you know, the book club to do. So it's more than just that was a good word. I think it's really easy to read something, know something. I always say this, head knowledge, but it's something different to actually execute. And I wanna get beyond knowing the appropriate things to say. I want to get beyond knowing the right answer. I want to get to a point where my actions line up to what I've been taught and what I know to be true.
I agree. And it's also, it's a do the work thing. Cause as much
do the work thing.
Yeah. I'm saying this to myself because I'm trying to remind myself, not because I fully believe it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I need to tell myself.
Say it again, Kev. Say it again.
I'm saying this stuff to remind myself, not because I fully believe it, right? I'm reminding myself, like, you can promote your stuff. This is your audience. You deserve what you work for. And also, when someone compliments you and says, hey, Kev, you're really good at that, don't diminish that by saying, oh, you know, just doing nothing. Like, if somebody says you're a marketing genius, which people say often, thank you. Thank you. That still, as I say thank you to that, bugs crawl underneath my skin because it is still very uncomfortable for me to say thank you to that when people compliment.
What do you say?
Josh gassing me up from over there, right? Especially from people, you know, close to me, people I admire. But so I'm telling myself, just say thank you so that each time it becomes more easy to do. It's kind of like earlier in one of your campaigns was like, you are worthy. You are more than enough, as is, without change. Like, that didn't click the first time you said that. Right. You still have days where you don't feel worthy. You don't feel more than enough. You feel like you need to change, and you got to keep, like, it's got to become a mantra, like, no, you are worthy. You are more than enough, as is, without change. You are worthy. You are more than enough. It's kind of like Cool Runnings. Yeah. I'm a bad mother. Yeah. Like, you got to keep saying that until it's like, yeah, and I'm out here. You feel me? I'm up in here. What's up? I deserve to be here. I belong in this room. Like, you're fighting imposter syndrome. You're fighting the way you grew up. You're fighting that poor vision of yourself. You're fighting body dysmorphia, whatever it is in your life. You got to keep saying that until you're like, you know what? Nah, we off that. I'm not thinking about myself small like that no more. I deserve to be here. I deserve this. And I am valuable. I bring something to the table. I wouldn't be in this room if I didn't have value. And then you start being like, okay, actually, you know, it's like a basketball player. Like, you missed a couple of shots. You're like, nah, I'm gonna keep after it. I'm good. Then you hit a couple more. And now you're like, okay, I'm back. I belong here. You know what I'm saying? And that's what I'm trying to get to. Like, I'm trying to operate in my zone of genius, Big Leap, in all ways in life, not just business-wise, but as a husband, as a father. And sometimes that means saying, hey, that thing no longer serves me because I am focusing on this now. And it might not be like, I got offered a consulting gig from a friend, good money, all that stuff. And normally I would have taken it. And I, because of this book, I realized I am taking this job. I would be taking this job because I like you. I want to support you. But the truth of the matter is, I don't want to spend my energy consulting for other companies right now. I want to spend my energy using my marketing creative energy on building my companies. Right. And although you might pay me a good amount, that amount that you're giving me, that time is actually better spent building my company. And the truth is, I really don't want to build anybody else's company right now. Yes. That's something I was doing. You,
by the way, but I'm not taking offense to this.
You,
but
you have told me that since all death. And I try to rationalize myself into, you know, saying why it would work and all that. But I finally now, because what is the truth is, all death was still safe.
Right.
To be an executive and talent, I got the best of both worlds. But I wasn't gonna fully become myself until I said, I gotta quit this job and go forward. I couldn't really do both. And that's the next step, is like really realizing, like, Kev, you really have the skills. But the fact, when the person sent me an email, I was just like,
Great. So wait, Kev, hold on. We got to wrap this conversation up, but really quick.
We don't have to do nothing, Liz. We can talk more. Stop being JoJo. Angel's not going to be here for another 30 minutes. Let's keep going.
Okay. I wanted you to briefly, quickly explain the Zone of Genius for those who haven't read the book. Because I didn't know what I was saying when I was saying it, but I think you got it with the terminology.
Yes. I'm trying to remember exactly. Basically, there's the zone of competence. Means you can do something, but other people can do it just as well, if not better. There's a zone of excellence where you do something and not many people in your trade or craft can do it well, right? And there's a zone of genius where you are operating fully in something you excel at. It comes easy to you and other people cannot do it nearly as well. Let's take Beyonce for an example. Okay. Beyonce was great. Mm-hmm. Beyonce was great in Destiny's Child. She was a fantastic singer. She was a fantastic lead singer, right? That's her zone of competence or excellence. Beyonce as an actress in Austin Powers is competent. She can act, but there's a lot more people who do this much better than she does. Right?
I love you, B, but it's a lot more people.
Yeah. Her zone of genius.
A little generous, but keep going.
Right. Her zone of genius is her Coachella performance.
Sure.
When you're watching that, you're like, there is not many people on earth that can command this stage and do what she is doing right now. Hardly anybody can do this. So for Beyonce to be at her best, it's better for her to spend her time preparing to do the Coachella performance and Lemonade the album than acting in Obsessed, where she stinks as an actress. She stinks in Austin Powers, but she is genius level at being Beyonce at Coachella, where you're like, oh, she is in her MF.
She's better than Michael Jackson.
She is very good. And she is probably the best at this. LeBron James playing Game 7 versus LeBron James in Trainwreck.
Right.
He's just an actor in Trainwreck. In games, you know what I'm saying? So in order to operate in your zone of genius, you have to turn down things that are in your zone of competence or maybe even excellence.
Sure.
Because you need to operate fully in your genius level. And for me, my marketing ideas come the best when I'm promoting something that I'm in and that I want to be a part of. I can be competent or even excellent consulting for your company, but you're never going to get all of me, because if I give you a really good idea, I'm going to be mad at myself that I didn't keep it for myself.
Sure,
right?
Sure.
So now I'm like, let me focus 100% on the things that I want to build. And even if I need to turn down some money and I have to turn down the provider thing of the husband and the safety and all that, because if I can really kill at this, I'm operating at a better level than me doing that for you. So that's kind of what I'm like, this is me at my very best. And I only want to, and that's also what I want for you, for Josh, for Angel, Tony, Jay, my boys, but each person has to identify their zone of genius and then move aside the distractions. I can't get you out of your head. I can tell you what book to read, but I can't identify you for you what is your zone of genius. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I can't tell you, like, let's go, Liz, let's go. You gotta be the one. And that's why most people won't ever do it. It's not because they don't have a zone of genius. It's because they let fear prevent fear, priorities, whatever, prevent them from operating in their zone of genius, not because they don't have the ability and the capability of doing so.
I think the other portion is, I think people look a lot at their zones of excellence. It's competence, excellence, and then genius, right? The hierarchy going up.
Yes, yes.
So I think a lot of people have a lot in the zone of excellence that it's hard to figure out which one is actually your zone of genius.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this actually goes back to very early on, and I've used this example over and over and I've never quite put it in these terms, but it's going to make sense. With me with makeup, it's a zone of excellence for me, I would say.
Something
that I'm really good at. Like, I'm better than the average person. If I wanted to be a professional, I absolutely could, because I know enough to like do. I can go to school, get the like official certification, boom, bang, bang, and I can do it. But I always, I never felt that it was my zone of genius. Of course, I wouldn't have used those words back there.
No, no, the language is new for you.
Right, the language is new, but I knew in my gut that it just wasn't it for me. And I think that's how a lot of people feel. It took me a long time to kind of figure out, okay, girl, well, if it ain't that, you, like, what else is available to you? I'm looking around and ain't other, it ain't a whole bunch of other options. And yeah. I think that's the part that people, you struggle with is you could have this huge bucket of excellence and trying to pick what's the one to pull out as your zone of genius. I think that's difficult. And it's especially difficult for people that don't have a talent that's monetizable. So you are funny. That's something that's obvious and tangible and something that you can say, this is what I want to monetize and capitalize on. For those people, again, me, I am people that don't have that. It takes a little bit more work to try to figure that out. And that's where like that exposure to all of these different avenues in life come into play, because it's not just, I'm funny. It's not just, can do whatever is a tangible skill. You kind of have to do more work to figure that out. And that's hard. And sometimes it's frustrating, to be honest.
I 100% agree with you. No argument here, but also there was a time when the monetizable skill I have now wasn't monetizable like this.
Sure.
Right. I had to search it out. Like from Boeing, the being a stand-up comedian professionally wasn't an option in Tacoma. I could do it for fun. I could get paid a little bit, but I couldn't do it for a job. So I had to figure out what that was for me. And that's where, YouTube and, Little Rascals and all that other stuff came. Like, and even like, people ask me, am I a movie writer? Like, I can write a movie. Mm-hmm. I don't live and breathe writing
the way someone else. I don't even know if it's your zone of excellence as much as just the zone of competence for you.
For movie writing?
Yeah.
I agree. Oh. It's just something I can do. I'm not even excellent, and it's definitely not genius. So I need to get someone who's operating at their genius level writing for me.
Right.
Directing for me. Even from like the way a director thinks and sees stuff. Remember when we shot that thing with Issa Rae? The way he was like, I was like, bro, I would never think of that in years. So for me to make the best film, it doesn't mean I need to write, direct, produce. I don't need to do that. I need to say, you write, you direct, I will act, I will market. I'll do what I do best, which is be funny and market. You make sure to call, you know what I'm saying? Like that's how you get the best project. I remember I was watching The Office, and my favorite cold open is the fire scene where Dwight does the thing and fakes a fire thing. Mm-hmm. And I remember watching that and being like, I can never write that myself. Sure. And I was talking to somebody about that, and he was like, bro, no one person wrote that. There's like 30 people in that writer's room. Like, that's all the best. He was like, that show had the best writers Hollywood had at the time all working together.
Right.
So one person's idea is maybe Angela should throw the cat up.
Sure.
And, oh, that's funny. And somebody else says, what if it came down in a different, you know what I'm saying? Like, but that's all these people operating their zone of genius together.
Together.
So that's what I need to build around me. And you're part of that. For our company, I need you at your zone of genius and me at my zone of genius and Tony and Josh and Brennan. And then the project is like, oh, snap.
Sure.
They really in their bag. But that's why I want all my friends to read the book, because it's going to be, I'm going to get frustrated. That's what Jordan was so frustrated at. He was operating in his genius and everybody else was competent or excellent at best. And he didn't need them to be him, but he needed them to be the best versions of them.
Right.
And it's frustrating to be around people who can't at least be the best versions of them.
Sure.
If you're being the best version of you, because then you're like, there's so much more in you. And you're really hurting my chances of succeeding because you're afraid to be the best you. If you can hit a three, but you're afraid to take the shot, we lose because they're gonna triple to me. And when I pass it to you, you gotta shoot that, baby. I need you to be Paxton or Steve Kerr. I don't need you to go for 40 like me. I don't need you to hit a triple double. But if I'm the decoy, you gotta doggone hit that shot. I only need 3 points out of you, that one shot.
Sure.
And that's what Jordan had with Paxton. Like, let me give you 8. But the last two was a 2 you couldn't hit.
Right.
Because they know you want the last shot, right? And that's what I need from my team. Otherwise, I got to get somebody else in here who's going to take the shot. Even if you miss, you are at least going to be open. Sure. I'm not even going to be open. You know what I'm saying? So that's what I want out of everybody around me. And the more I get into it, the more I'm going to demand it from you. Or I'm going to get someone else to do it. Because the more comfortable I get...
Like, let's all just be clear. Get somebody to do
it. You know I ain't talking about you.
Okay, I just want to make sure we're clear because you just kept talking. And I just want to make sure that we're talking about what we're talking about and not talking about what we're not talking about, okay? Let's just all make sure we're reading from the same book. And we're all on page 12, paragraph 3, line 2.
Are you done?
I am now.
All I need is when Josh, I asked Josh to edit the documentary and he was like, I can't do it. And I'm like, you can do it. And
right.
He's like, I can do it. And then he turns it in. Yes, that's right. All I need. Right. I need you to be in your bag. These brand deals that Josh is editing, I'm like, whoo, baby, now when you pay me that money, I can turn that in with confidence because I'm like, yo, this is something I couldn't do.
Right.
Right. But that might mean, okay, Josh, you don't edit podcasts anymore. Because somebody else can do that. Let's put you on these things because you are really taking the level up, right? Yeah. That's all I'm saying. I'm not going to dog and replace my wife with a white woman.
Okay. Anything else? I don't know if that got... Oh, it just got to them.
Yeah. That's all I'm saying. And I think that's why I'm kind of the most excited because, like, even with us working with Brennan and Transit Pictures and the way the comedy show looks now... I'm like, okay, y'all are doing your version of what I do.
Sure, absolutely.
And you know for me, you've been in those meetings where I'm like, I can't do this.
Right.
I would have had Josh shooting that on an iPhone in here.
Right.
And we would not have the success we had at that because it looks better with iPhones.
Absolutely.
I mean, it looks better with real,
right,
with cameras. You know what I'm saying? Like, and that's kind of one thing I learned in therapy that like, part of our next level of success requires me to let go a little bit and trust that the other person that I'm giving this to can hold their own. Because if I try to hold on to everything, it's not a scalable solution.
Yeah, I think that's the other part that's really quite interesting is we both are holding on to models that are not sustainable long-term. I've been listening to, what's his name? Sam Johnson or something like that. I can't remember. Anyway, he's this YouTuber. Not Sam Smith. He's a YouTuber that analyzes singing videos. I think it's Sam.
Oh, your white boy that you've been listening to for the last week.
Yeah, I don't know. I randomly got hooked on him and I just absolutely adore him. But one of the things that he always talks about are singers who you can hit this note or you could do something. Yeah, you can do it. It may even sound really great right now, but is that sustainable long-term? Is the shortcut that you're doing now that can get the results that you want, but in the long term, it's actually doing damage. Is that sustainable? Are you actually crippling your career today by taking the shortcut today that you don't even know in the future it's going to end up not being working in your benefit? And I think that's what this conversation is about. It's about recognizing that you have to let go of control because that's a sustainable model for scaling. It's about recognizing that I can't hold on to every dollar because that's not sustainable. There are things that you're just not in your area of genius, not even in your area of excellence. So you can't do it all. So you have to outsource. You have to hire help. Be okay with letting go of those dollars. That's a sustainable model. And so I think even as a kite, you know, we want to, well, at least me, I want to get on my pedestal and talk about how I'm the stable one and look at me saving my money and I'm so responsible. And at the end of the day, that's not sustainable either. So we both have things.
Really? Look at that, Liz.
First of all, I already have said that.
You ain't said that clearly.
Well, read between the lines. So anyway, do you have anything else you want to add? I think we're at a good point too. I don't want to run in circles, but I think we've exhausted.
No.
This conversation.
Yeah, no. I've reached my end with this. I just want to say this year has sucked in so many ways, but was also necessary in so many ways. I think I would have been running the same way had I not had this forced adjustment period.
Right, right, right.
And I'm just trying to take advantage of this as opposed to like not, not, or for a good part of quarantine, I was just like, this sucks, this sucks, this sucks.
Me too.
Right? And I think you deserve that time. Right? But then you're going to be like, okay, now what am I going to do about it?
Right.
I'm saying like, and if you stay in the this sucks, this sucks, this sucks, okay, then you, now what? Right. Like, you got to feel your, my therapist always says, feel your feelings, give those feelings a voice, and then you need to adjust and move. What does that, how does it make you feel? I'm sad, I'm angry, I'm upset, I'm frustrated. Okay, now what? Like, and take your time feeling those feelings. Like, it takes time, right? But feeling your feelings and dwelling on your feelings are separate things, right? You gotta give the adequate time to each of those, you know? So we looked around and we're like, okay, this part of the world's not changing for months. So what are you gonna do with the way the world is now? Not where you want it, not where it used to be.
Sure.
Where it is right now. What are you gonna do right now? And a lot of businesses, we've studied this, and a lot of businesses that grow successfully capitalize on a certain moment in time that may not ever come back around again. Like I'm gonna keep talking about it, but it's also a good example. Bob Johnson built BET at a certain time when there wasn't Black representation on TV.
Right.
He had a lot of access to Black content that people have made. He had people that wanted to see it, and he had advertisers that wanted to get, you know, the Black or get the Black audience's eyes on these products.
Right.
Right. He admitted like he couldn't make BET right now. Right. So right now you can't go safely everywhere to a stand-up comedy show. Right. Some places are safe. Some places are unsafe. Some places have limited capacity, blah, blah, blah. I don't know how long we'll do keep your distance comedy, but for right now, this is the only way I can do stand-up comedy.
Sure.
And it's a more sustainable business model than trying to force myself to risk coronavirus.
Absolutely.
By performing 5 nights in a show. Maybe it lasts for 3 months, maybe it lasts for 3 years, but this is what I got to do right now. So let me make the most of it. You know what I'm saying? So that's kind of all. I'm really excited about the life that we are building, even though it comes with its bumps and bruises.
Yeah.
You know,
definitely
so.
Does. And this year has definitely been a lot of bumps and a lot of bruises, but I think it makes you better. Bumps.
It definitely makes you better.
Yeah.
And honestly, in our marriage, there's a lot of times where it's like, these situations bring out the extremes of our personalities.
Right.
You know what I mean? And sometimes that clashes with like your money story, you know, with my money story, the way you see yourself, the way I, you know what I'm saying? And it's, you know, and then like adjusting and all that stuff. So it is still exciting to move forward together.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm most excited about.
Yes. All right. Any last words? Any last thoughts?
I got a doo-doo.
Of course you do. Thank you, guys.
I had an empty stomach and this one come out.
Well,
I was sleepy.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you guys so much for joining us for today's Love Hour podcast. I'll think of a topic for next week, but I enjoyed this conversation. So thank you, Kevin, for like going in with me.
It was great.
Yeah. Okay. That's it. That's all. Until the next episode. Bye.
Bye. Yeah.